Good evening, I'm Sigim Gabadeli and you're watching Stockwatch. Thank you so much for making the time for us today. Tackling your questions in studio tonight, Jean-Pierre Fester from Fair Tree Capital and Dricus Combrink from Cappy Craft. Don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being here this evening. Let's start with the overall market. I mean, we had a pretty good day. We saw that oil price and, of course, the rand weakening as well. So that giving Sasol particularly some momentum.
No, we didn't start out great today. Basically, the rand weakening because our terms of trade just weakened on the day. Higher oil price, our main import basically. And Chinese, the expectancy from the Chinese to have further liquidity injections and fiscal injections into the economy. Yeah. It's waning a bit. So, you know, base metals and iron ore especially won't do as well in such an environment. So a bit of profit taking there. But then late afternoon when the American markets opened, you know, it's as if a flood of money came into the market and all those shares were propped up with some of the other rand hedges, which were strong to begin with the day.
Yeah, it was a good day for Sasol.
Yes, look, it's not going to be good when the oil price in rand terms effectively feeds into a higher petrol price for all of us. But the one way you can hedge it as a South African consumer is by buying Sasol shares. Obviously, as the Lake Charles complex comes online and more of the subunits comes online, it's more of a chemicals company than a pure rand oil-based company as it was in the past, but still one could almost make the case of saying that as a consumer, to protect yourself against a rising rand petrol price, everyone should have a little bit of Sasol in their portfolios.
All right, and do you like Sasol?
Well, not really. I think the capital allocation decisions the last 15-odd years has not been the best. It's a great hedge to have in your portfolio. That is if you're only permitted to buy Sasol, to have Sasol in your local portfolio.
Yeah.
But, you know, if the world's your stage, then you can buy any major oil play, and there are a few better choices, in my opinion, that you can access if you really want an energy hedge in your portfolio.
All right, let's have a quick look at what's come through. Here's a question from Greg who says, he's got three of them, so I'm going to ask all three, but they're sort of linked. Says, how do I invest directly into inflation-linked government bonds in South Africa with a strategy of investing in a bond where the maturity period of that bond is in line with when I want to retire? So, for example, a government bond that matures in 20 years' time. Question two is this a wise investment as part of diversification? And thirdly, is it better to invest into a bond ETF as opposed to directly into the bond? And what is the difference?
Okay. So firstly, if you want to buy an inflation-linked bond directly, you probably need at least R1 million. And it's a more institutional market rather than a retail market.
Okay.
But as far as I remember, there are RSA retail bonds.
Yes.
That do sell in smaller denominations, and they've also included an inflation-linked one. So you don't have as much choice, but at least you can go and buy it effectively directly from the Treasury through the RSA Retail Bonds website.
And they've been marketing those, for a number of years now.
Yes, keep in mind that it is taxable, though. So the benefit of an inflation-linked bond is your coupon is linked to inflation. So the theory goes that as inflation increases, your coupon increases, and that means it keeps pace with inflation. It's linked with inflation. But with the tax and the fact that it lags a bit, it actually means it might not quite keep up with inflation if inflation accelerates quite drastically. So keep that in mind.
Okay.
And then lastly, over a 20-year time period, I would say it is a reasonable investment, but over that longer time period, I think equities in general is a better hedge against inflation versus an inflation-linked bond.
Is it a good diversification strategy?
Well, if you already have a portfolio of other risky assets,
yes,
then adding an inflation-linked bond where there aren't already one. But most pensioners, most annuities, most of them already have inflation-linked bonds inside your general balance funds or absolute return funds. They generally do have allocation to those instruments. So you're not really going to diversify. You're making a call on an instrument. And from a risk perspective, it's fairly low risk. except if the government defaults.
Yeah.
Then you lose your money.
Then you lose your money. So you've got to ask yourself that question. Here's a question on ShopRite. What did you make off their move last week to buy back the deferred shares from Christo Visa?
Yeah, I think it's part of a global move against all kinds of funny shareholder structures, you know, where we've got extra voting rights but no economic rights. I think Christo will like it because he can monetize effectively what is only a votable asset at the moment. He monetizes that. I think it's worth about 3.5 billion rand now for what was actually had no economic benefit to him. But he loses control of the company effectively. Maybe he can push one board member, but that's as far as it goes with the shareholding that he'll be left with. But I think it's healthy for the general shareholder structure of ShopRite.
All right. Your thoughts?
I would like to see the circular when it is released and all the details of the transaction. We just had the general outline in the SENS announcement, but there are a few question marks. For instance, I think the company admits that the deferred shares only 0.1 cents in value each, and it's a separate transaction where Tibalt will issue ShopRite will issue 20 million shares to Christo Visa for him to buy the shares in Tibalt via Titan. So it's a bit complicated, but the point is that I would like to see why 20 million shares should be issued to Titan just to buy shares from Tibalt.
Is it really an arm's length transaction?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So that's the detail we need to see. Omar wants to know, can you break down the Barloworld BEE property scheme for us? It's Khula Sizwe, I think it's called.
Pause.
so basically, Barloworld has done quite an innovative scheme in terms of saying they want to empower the company. One of the assets that aren't being used as effectively as it could is the vast property portfolio of Barloworld. So they can sell the property to a consortium of investors, mostly management, but also then open it up for black retail investors to invest. And through that, Barloworld will end up renting a lot of these properties from a BE company made up of the black management team as well as public investors. So on the face of it, it seems like a good scheme to buy into because property is relatively secure. Your tenant is secure. It's a known entity, seeing that Barloworld used to own these properties. But I haven't looked at the valuation in terms of does the offer price that the public can invest justify or does it represent a good value? On that, I'm not too sure.
But does it resemble any of the other BEE structures that we've seen?
No other company has really used their property in this regard. We've had news earlier today to say that there's, from the BEE commissioner's point of view, extra criticism regarding trusts.
Yes.
So the one thing that's quite interesting is when companies have got assets or put their own shares in a trust, and there's this natural conflict then between assets owned by trust, which means that after a number of years when the initial beneficiaries moved on, you can continue the empowerment of the company. So it means, you know, it's almost in conflict with the once empowered, almost always empowered principle of saying that if it's in trust, you re-empower people as they come into the organization. It sounds now the way the commission is going by saying it shouldn't be in trust, it should be directly owned by individuals, but that means that once those individuals leave the organization, what happens then? It was empowered once, but now does one need to continuously do empowerment deals? And that's that natural tension. So hopefully the Barloworld deal won't be affected by the new scrutiny regarding assets held in trust.
All right. Here's one from Henrik who says, your view on MTN, please, for a potential buy.
Well, MTN has had a lot of headwinds the last few years. There are a lot of intrinsic risks that plays out, or idiosyncratic risks, you know, core to the company. Being in Africa in 22 countries and in the Middle East, you know, you're going to have some risk that other companies don't. Yeah. Some of those played out, especially in Nigeria, of course. Iran is still there. Trump is talking about sanctions on Iran again. MTN has run into trouble with the U.S. authorities on a previous occasion about business in Iran. So that's not off the table. But it does seem like the Nigerians have come to the table with regards at least to the exchange control fines, you know, that's been settled at a far lower penalty, and then we're still waiting for the tax dispute between them and the Nigerian tax authorities. Having said that, all of these headwinds, the last few years, African currencies, what have you, that can turn into tailwinds in the next few years. Still a company with more than 200 million subscribers in sub-Saharan Africa. Now other company that I know of has that footprint.
Has that kind of footprint.
And it's easy for them to push other products. Think banking, financial services. They're doing that to all these customers. And you've got a lot of new revenue lines that can spring up over the next 10 to 20 years there. So over the long haul, I think MTN is something to you might consider in your portfolio.
Is the bad news priced in, would you say?
Yes, that is effectively the key question. Yeah. And I thought below 100 Rand it was priced in. It's now probably closer to fair value because there are a lot of risks due to these geographies that they operate in. But, you know, telecommunications is a basic human need these days. And I don't see that a lot of these governments can really squeeze these companies so hard that they effectively shut down and don't give these telecommunication services to the populace.
Yeah, and I think as Dricka says, because they've already got this massive footprint, they're probably in a good position.
Correct, and there's synergies in that you can roam on your own network when people move through these different countries that you have your own network. So I'm also relatively bullish on MTN.
All right, PSG Consult, some thoughts on that. Also, the PE ratio always seems a bit stretched, 22 at the moment, I think. So what would be a good entry price to earnings ratio for an investment like this?
Well, there's three businesses within PSG Consult. There's PSG Insure, which is actually which has to compete with the likes of MyWay and to a certain extent to obviously to OUTsurance and the likes. So it's not the most attractive business out there, but they've got PSG Asset Management, which is a great performer performance-wise and, you know, the product investment-wise. So they're doing well, but they're still fairly small compared to some of the bigger ones, and it's small compared to the other biggest division, PSG Wealth. And they've done fairly well in a difficult market because they've absorbed a lot of other independent financial advisors over the last few years. But, you know, that market or that strategy has become saturated to a certain extent. So I'm not sure where that is going, where the business model is going from here, what's going to drive that growth going forward. What you need for PSG Consult's share price to justify the rating at the moment is a bull market in the local equity market, which you know, is
what's the
make up your own mind about that.
What's the likelihood of massive bull markets?
Yeah, not great. I would say there's one more variable to that calculation, and that is flows.
Okay.
And if you look at the flows that different asset managers have attracted, PSG Asset Management have attracted a reasonable amount of flows, one of the top companies in terms of attracting money. So even though the markets haven't been easy, if you can attract a lot of money, that really helps to boost your revenue.
I would have liked to own that division on its own, actually.
Okay, yeah. Rather than having it with the... Okay.
It's growing the best of the three divisions,
right,
and it has probably the best prospects of the three. It is a premiumly priced share because of the quality of some of the divisions. If you can get it cheaper, great, below a 20 PE, but you might wait a long time for it to get there.
Question on US markets and one on Westco. We'll get to that in a moment. Time for a short break. Keep sending through your questions via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Back in a moment. Welcome back. Let's take a quick look at international markets now after that long weekend. Markets coming in quite strong on this Tuesday. It's, of course, this another strong week for corporate earnings out in the United States. We're also expecting first quarter GDP numbers out on a Friday. That should give the market direction as well. Let's move over to Europe. It looks like maybe the attention on Brexit is starting to wane, but of course there are talks this week between the ruling and the opposition parties in Britain, and there's some pressure on the Prime Minister there to step down. That's going to be also driving some direction over in London as well. But the pound taking some strain today on that particular tension. So the FTSE up, although on the day, about 0.8%. And still with me in studio, Jean-Pierre Fester from Fairtree Capital and Trickus Combrink from Capricraft. Haven't talked much about how the US has been doing. It looks like that particular economy has kind of, as much as everyone's talking about concerns about a slowing global economic growth, that economy is expected to just have been pushing further ahead than what we might have been expecting.
And it's driven by sectors in the economy that I'm sure in a few years some we will learn that we're not measuring correctly. Think about the peer-to-peer economy, stuff that that a lot of new technologies enable you to do. And there's certain sectors that's just driving that economy that's not present in Europe. Europe hasn't got the same technological leadership that the US has. And obviously the S&P 500, the constituents there are, you know, all these technological leaders that are redefining the world economy at the moment. That's not always present in the US, but also present there where there is some growth. I'm bullish on the US economy still. That can change if the data changes. But over the long term, I think it's still the best, or even the short, medium, and long term, it's the best house in an ugly neighborhood at the moment.
I also think it makes the case for the change in the way that we measure GDP, the way we measure growth, because as you say, as the fourth industrial revolution and technology starts to lead, we can't still use the same measurements that we're using to say that this is how economic growth actually works in countries.
Actually, and apart from that, another factor is the benign inflation outlook. I cannot recall, and I've studied extensively financial history, any other time that we've had such a prolonged period of, maybe it's central bank intervention that has changed that. Maybe it's just the technological shifts, the platonic shifts underneath the economy. Mm. But this is a very benign inflation environment. You know that you have these deflation fears that arises now and then. But we've not really seen deflation in the U.S. at least, some of it in Europe. Absolutely Goldilocks era for stocks, especially in the U.S. Maybe we'll look back someday and it will redefine the textbooks. I don't know.
We hope so. Your thoughts, Jay?
I manage a local hedge fund and a global hedge fund, and whenever I look at the global stocks out there, there's more than 6,000 stocks, which is my universe, stocks more than $1 billion in market cap in developed markets in the U.S., Europe, Australia, Asia. And when you look at U.S. companies, just in general, they are great quality companies.
Yeah.
They are high returns on capital. They grow very strongly. It comes from a very flexible economic structure that they operate in, with less regulation. The technological advancement that they have and the edge that they have, where, for instance, when we buy anything on our cell phones, a portion either goes to the Apple iStore, or it goes to Google Alphabet because of the Android operating system, or it goes to PayPal because you made a payment, or Visa or MasterCard. These are global companies, but they all are based in the U.S. So for various reasons, the U.S. just has got the best companies out there when you look at these companies on
the global basis. This is where the tax authorities are trying to figure out ways to deal with taxing these organizations. Luke says, what does the panel think about utilizing a put spread on Lyft to bet on more downside? And secondly, going long Nintendo, as Tencent will now sell the Switch console on their platform, and they're switching to subscription-based model. So put spread on Lyft and Nintendo.
No, that sounds reasonable. Lyft has already got problems sharply down from the IPO. Certain investors saying that they might have misled investors in some of the documentation, pumping up the expectation of how well they will be doing. So a put spread, meaning you buy a put close to the current share price and you sell one lower down as well, so that you effectively pay less premium away.
Okay.
But you make money when the share price falls. That's what it comes down to. I think that's a reasonable strategy in the case of Lyft. And buying Nintendo, yes, we've seen Tencent has got such a strong position in China. The moment they put anything on Weixin or on their platforms, it takes off. So that doesn't sound like a bad idea either, buying Nintendo.
Everything he said. All right, let's have a quick look. Wesco, someone wanted to know what JP thinks of Wesco at current price, 147 cents.
So I never have taken a close look at Wesco, but I'm a shareholder in Afrimat, and it was interesting to see that they are making a bid for a Universal Coal, and they might get into the coal sector after being in quite a few other aggregates and minerals, including iron ore, which they did very well. So that piqued my interest, and it would seem like if you compare Westgold to some other more junior coal miners, it seems reasonable, reasonably well priced, quite cheap.
Yeah.
But it's quite an opaque part of the market also. I mean, you've got coal that you can reference to Richards Bay in the export price. You've got certain contracts with Eskom, and there's still an open question mark if all those contracts are robust and ethical in terms of how they were concluded. So it's an opaque part of the market, and therefore you need to bet on management to make the right decisions. And I'm quite happy with my bet playing the coal sector via Afrimat.
All right. Roger in PE says, is Omnia's move today a flash in the pan? They were up quite strongly, and they said they're going to make a loss, but they're speaking to their lenders to restructure their debt.
I don't think this rules out a rice issue along the road. They're an SA-based manufacturer. You know, they've had a very difficult time the last 20 years, 15 years or so. So, you know, labor costs are rising. They've got a very big fixed cost structure. So when there is certain once-off events like we've had the last year or two with Omnia, the drought playing into it, they had a lot of acquisitions, bundled together, a lot of debt. And, you know, with that high fixed cost structure, if something goes wrong, you can't mix our business leverage with our financial leverage and maybe you get lucky, maybe you don't. They weren't lucky, and I'm not sure the rice issue is off the table.
All right. Before we get to stock picks, here's a question from Trevor. What's the view of the panel on the retail sector over the next 12 months, specifically Woolies and Mr. Price? I'll start with you.
I think a lot depends on the election. I think consumer sentiment will take its cue from there, and if we get a good, peaceful election with a outcome that doesn't need the marriage of
coalitions
and people who otherwise wouldn't work together.
Horse trading, exactly.
So if all goes well, if you see the glasses half full, I think there's some value in the retail sector, especially Woolies between the two. I still think Mr. Price is a bit on the expensive side, but it depends on the election, I would say.
Retailers?
I'm buying off our own retailers that have performed, you know, business-wise, not the share price. Forget about the share price for now, but business-wise, in the environment that we've had for the last 3 years. So if they can perform in a recessionary environment like we've had, I own them because I'm not banking. There's upside if there's a great outcome after the elections, and they will benefit from that. But if there's not, I still want to make some money.
So
I'm owning those. Call me and I'll tell you tomorrow.
All right, let's get to your stock picks. I'll start with you, JP.
So a global company, as per usual, and it's roughly the sixth largest U.S. airline called JetBlue. Yeah, it's a low-cost airline. And they recently announced they're going to start also now flying to London. They used to fly to the U.S. and countries closer to the U.S., like in Latin America, for instance, and the Caribbean. And that's quite interesting in terms of a hub-and-spoke type situation where that could get a lot more passengers, allow a lot more passengers to buy JetBlue tickets because of the new London route. They've also got very modern fleets. They've got a few new Airbus A321neos. Mm-hmm. They made that strategic choice, which worked out quite well relative to some others who chose the Boeing 737 MAX.
Yeah.
So they are well placed there. And also, if you look at their margins, it's lower than their competitors, which means that there's an opportunity to get to the same type of efficiencies and increase those margins, and they've given guidance to that effect. They came out with results in the last 2 days, and the share price actually rose today, notwithstanding a higher oil price, which you would normally associate with a lower share price for
an
airline because of
not worried
being
about
the
oil
cost. Correct. So that is the primary concern, but it affects all airlines.
Yeah.
So if you have one that is gaining efficiencies, well, everyone will have a headwind of oil prices, and it's relatively cheap.
Yeah.
It's already discounting a higher oil price. I think the current share price offers value.
All right. Final word. Your stock.
CMH is one of those retailers, Combined Motor Holdings, and it's a retailer. They sell cars. I think they're well-positioned location that they have, you know, the locations that they operate in, the brands that they operate. I think they're great allocators of the capital, the management team, and I think they have done well in the recessionary environment. They've continued to manage costs in this environment, knowing that we're in a difficult environment. They've paid down a lot of debt. And it's sitting at a 7 price earnings ratio, while I think Motors is at about an 11, a lot larger, obviously, than CMH. But I think CMH is actually much shrewder operators than their peers out there. And 30% ROEs, I'm not sure they can continue that in this environment. They released results today, only 6% down in a recessionary environment. Remember, this is a very cyclical sector. And if they can just maintain this level of earnings for this year, I think it's extremely cheap.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much to both of you for your time today. Jean-Pierre Fester from Fairtree Capital and Trikus Combrink from Capi Craft. We'll take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening. Bye-bye. Toxics. I'll start with you, JP.
So a global company, as per usual, and it's roughly the sixth largest U.S. airline called JetBlue. Yeah, it's a low-cost airline, and they recently announced they're going to start also now flying to London. They used to fly to the U.S. and countries closer to the U.S., like in Latin America, for instance, and the Caribbean. And that's quite interesting in terms of a hub-and-spoke type situation where that could get a lot more passengers, allow a lot more passengers to buy JetBlue tickets because of the new London route. They've also got very modern fleets. They've got a few new Airbus A321neos. Mm-hmm. They made that strategic choice, which worked out quite well relative to some others who chose the Boeing 737 MAX.
Yeah.
So they are well placed there. And also, if you look at their margins, it's lower than their competitors, which means that there's an opportunity to get to the same type of efficiencies and increase those margins, and they've given guidance to that effect. They came out with results in the last 2 days, and the share price actually rose today, notwithstanding a higher oil price, which you would normally associate with a lower share price for
an
airline.
And that's what I was going to ask. You're not worried about oil.
Cost. Correct. So that is the primary concern, but it affects all airlines.
Yeah.
So if you have one that is gaining efficiencies, well, everyone will have a headwind of oil prices, and it's relatively cheap.
Yeah.
It's already discounting a higher oil price. I think the current share price offers value.
All right. Final word. Your stock.
CMH is one of those retailers, combined motor holdings.
Yeah.
And it's a retailer. They sell cars. I think they're well-positioned location that they have, you know, the locations that they operate in, the brands that they operate. I think they're great allocators of the capital, the management team. And I think they have done well in the recessionary environment. They've continued to manage costs in this environment, knowing that we're in a difficult environment. They've paid down a lot of debt, and it's sitting at a 7 price earnings ratio, while I think Motors is at about an 11, a lot larger, obviously, than CMH. But I think CMH is actually much shrewder operators than their peers out there. And 30% ROEs. I'm not sure they can continue that in this environment. They released results today.
Yeah.
Only 6% down in a recessionary environment. Yeah. Remember, this is a very cyclical sector. And if they can just maintain this level of earnings for this year, I think it's extremely cheap.
All right. We'll leave it there. Thank you so much to both of you for your time today. Jean-Pierre Fester from Fairtree Capital and Trikus Combrink from Capi Craft. We'll take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening. Bye-bye. I'm going to go to the next one.